Welcome to Crypto Nights, where we help you finally make sense of the trending world of cryptocurrencies. So gather your virtual piggy bank and let's get started.
Hey, Darwin. Welcome to Crypto Nights podcast recording. We are so excited to have you as our guest speaker today.
Hi. Great to be here.
Awesome, Darwin. And today we're going to be talking about your project, CrowdVilla. Why don't we start off by you telling us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about CrowdVilla, and that'll kick this podcast off.
Right. So I'm based in Singapore. I've been dabbling with a few startups before. And of course, with the recent, you know, blockchain revolutions, we kind of see that there is a new wave of, you know, implementations of what we can disrupt in the real world. And that is why we are creating CrowdVilla. But the funny story about CrowdVilla is that when we first started, we're not actually working on CrowdVilla per se, because we were trying to create digital assets that is backed by real estate. But when we first started about 2 years ago, of course, the industry was not so hyped out. And then we can basically operate, you know, quietly behind the scene building stuff until about a year ago when all this hype happened, regulators starts coming in and basically they are looking at, you know, our structures, our first project, likely as securities. And that is why we thought to ourselves that, hey, we need to create a new model, a new structures where we can still operate within the regulatory boundaries. And at the same time, we feel that, you know, the security model is just not ready yet. And that is why we have to do it as a non-security way.
Got it. So what is the fundamental idea behind CrowdVilla? What is your elevator explanation?
Right. So CrowdVilla, it's basically a community-owned assets. So indirectly, the community that will be contributing to the project will be the indirect owners of all the assets that we will acquire. Now, in this case, it will be holiday properties. So imagine this. With the sharing economy that we know today, take for an example, Airbnb. If we really look into it deeper, it's not really a sharing economy, actually, because we are still the tenant. The host is still the landlord. The only difference is that we are only renting it daily. So we can call it a micro rental business, probably. But the economic model is the same. You still have your tenant, you still have your landlord, which is still, you know, trying to make the most money out of the tenant. Of course, all these middlemen, the platform itself, which will also take a cut. So we think to ourselves, and this is the real problems that we have. Suppose you and I, you know, we are good friends. And then suppose you and I, we travel to Bali often, for example. And then we can come up with a scheme where, you know, both of us, we pull our resources together and we buy a villa in Bali together. And then between the two of us, we agree that I can use it for 6 months in a year, and you can also use it for 6 months in a year. Now, when we actually travel to Bali and utilize our 6 months, technically we're not paying rent anymore. The whole economic model is different now. Now, the challenge is that with that model today, you and I, we need to be good friends. We need that trust factor before we can pull it off. So we thought that this token economy, you know, the blockchain can actually unlock these structures. Now, only it's not only the two of us now, we can actually, you know, get thousands of people in the same scheme with just not one villa in Bali, but thousands of properties globally. So that's kind of the underlying logic behind what we do. We kind of want to change the sharing economy that we know today into a new model, which is true sharing economy, where the beneficials, you know, interests of the properties lies between the members, the community itself.
That is that's very exciting. So, because that was one of the questions I had was, how is it different from Airbnb? But I think you already answered that. You said in Airbnb, you don't own the property that you are, you don't co-own the property that you are going to be renting at, for example. Or
right.
It's not community owned. That's probably a better way of putting it. So
right.
And then, so there is community ownership of the properties. And then there are people that are renting these properties globally as they probably travel on vacations or holidays or maybe even business. It doesn't matter. So how is the money collected and distributed?
Right. So that's the beautiful thing about this, right? Because of the model, technically, there is no money that is transacted. So imagine, again, the example that I shared earlier. Suppose the two of us, we shared a villa in Bali. When I travel to Bali and I utilize my allocations, technically, I don't supposed to pay rent. I don't supposed to, you know, need to pay anything. Basically, I just need to prove that I have that access right, that I, you know, as I have still the inventory for me to use within the 6 months, and the room or the place should be made available for me. So with that same consequence as that proof of access to the properties, as long as you can produce the amount of tokens that is needed to access the property, then you can stay in the property. But then how you're getting your tokens is not really within our purview anymore, because you can actually, you know, buy your tokens in a secondary market, but you're not paying directly to us. That's really a secondary market that is thriving in itself. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah. So has this model been tested out before? Is it an existing business that you have?
Right. So it's not existing business for us per se, but in the real world, the same business model has been actually implemented in a different form, although it's in a different form, which is a timeshare model. So in essence, it's the same thing. When you are contributing to the whole economy of this token model, you are like taking, you know, ownership of the underlying assets, and that works like a timeshare. For example, if you own 10% of the structures of one villa, for example, then indirectly in a year, you should have about 30 days of use in that structures. So that is very similar to timeshare today. Timeshare industry, of course, is a multi-billion dollar industry, you know, across jurisdictions globally. But the main difference is that for timeshare industry today, all of them are being run as a for-profit company. So in essence, the company is forward selling their inventory to the users. And the main difference with our model with CrowdVilla is that CrowdVilla is a nonprofit entity. So all this asset will be owned by this nonprofit entity that is based in Singapore. So we do that because of legal reason. Ownership of assets in the real world today, we will still need a legal entity to own it. And unfortunately, token holders is not a legal entity to own these assets today in the real world. So we have to create a new entity, and in this case, it's a nonprofit one, to on paper own this property.
I see. So there's a legal entity that owns it, but the tokens corresponding to the property are owned by the community.
Correct.
And those tokens are somehow connected, dotted line, to that property. So we know who are the token holders that in effect own this property, but legally there is an entity that owns the property. So everybody is happy.
Correct. But it's not unique to each properties. It will work as a collection of properties or portfolio.
I see. Got it. Okay. Now, having said that, I think we're getting an idea about how that works. So, but you are a nonprofit as a company, right? So, but then, Yeah, who makes the money and how?
Right. So CrowdVilla in itself is a nonprofit entity. But our company is called Radar. And this is, you know, what I shared earlier about we started this company 2 years back and we started building technology. And you know, the technology is basically to create a digital asset that is backed by real estate. So we did it totally differently back then. But we have to scrap that earlier model because of regulations. So that entity, Radar, it's still a for-profit company. We are a technology company. We are building technology. So we are still making money in this model out of, in a way, licensing the software to CrowdVilla entity. So look at it as a SaaS model, basically, where we create the software. We allow the nonprofit entity to use the software. And then basically, the more users that is involved in this ecosystem, we as a software creator will still benefit. So that's how we make money. We make money as a technology company. We don't make money out of a real estate operations.
How do you pronounce it? You pronounce it as Radar?
Radar, R-E-I-D-A-O.
So is Radar making money through tokens?
Not really directly through the tokens, but through the CrowdVilla setup. Like, for example, when you are creating the secondary tokens, so this is getting like technicals. basically, for the token economy, for the structures, the idea is that whenever a user that is coming in and generates tokens, the utility tokens, Radar will basically get a cut in that operations.
I see. But it's still, it's still not clear to me. If you're a SaaS software that is being used by CrowdVilla,
right,
you have to get paid somehow. So I'm assuming that, is that through the tokens?
Right, yes, sorry. It is through the tokens. So our incentive, it's still through the token economy. Okay. It's not through fiat payment.
Okay, so you're all aligned in terms of, and
yes.
Yeah, going through your website, I figured out that you have two different kinds of tokens. Maybe now is a good time to explain what are those two different types of tokens and how do we use each of them?
Right. So the first token is basically the main token. We call it CrowdVilla. And the idea is that this main token will be backed by the portfolio of properties. Now, simply put, for example, when we do the token sale, let's suppose we raise $50 million and then we issued out $50 million worth of CrowdVilla tokens. Now, the tokens, CrowdVilla tokens, will be backed by this $50 million that we raise, and then subsequently we acquire properties from it. So these tokens will be perpetual. You will hold it as long as these properties are in play. Now, the secondary token, I think this is the key to the whole operations, is that all these properties that we will have in the portfolio will have its utility value, which is the time value of the properties. Right, every day, basically, you are burning 1 day worth of the stay in every property. Now, we represent this model in the second tokens. So if you hold the CrowdVilla tokens, you will be able to generate the secondary token. We call it Crowd Points, to act as a points, basically. Suppose we tell people that, hey, to stay one night in Bali, in this villa, you need 100 crowd points, for example, then you will need to acquire or generate 100 crowd points and use it to stay in the property. But when you use that crowd points, it's not transacted, it's not transferred. And these tokens will be burned, it'll be out of play. And that to simulate the actual time value of the property. Because if you use that time in the property, basically, the time is gone.
Okay. And
So then how does the crowd, let's say 10 people own that, but the way you're doing it is the entire community owns the entire portfolio. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So, and these portfolios are being rented using the points.
Correct.
And the points are being burned?
Yes, correct.
Okay. So where is that value generated being distributed amongst the owners?
So the token holders basically own, the CrowdVilla tokens proportionate to the whole holdings of the properties. So if you hold, for example, if you own 10% of the portfolio, technically you should have 10% of the utility value of the portfolio every year. So that's how we actually distribute all this utility tokens. If you own less, then you technically own less utility out of the whole portfolio.
I see. And your points are generated annually?
So we'll create a process basically where these tokens, the CrowdVilla tokens needs to be locked in the system. And then when it is being locked, it will generate these crowd points. And you will be able to generate it, for example, like within 6 months. So it's not automatic generations because of technical reason. And we got some feedbacks from exchanges, basically. Like many don't really like auto-generating tokens because it creates other headaches. So users will need to take actions which we will provide the UI for, to generate all these tokens.
Okay, so let me. So I like to travel and I like timeshare. So I'll buy some of your ownership tokens, and as a result of that, periodically I get these points, and I can utilize the points to stay in different. And my ownership determines how many points I get. My points determine how many days I can stay at, and depending upon the location, the number of points per day is different. So did I get more or less right?
Yes, you're right.
Okay, perfect. So it's like a closed community. Only the owners are also able to stay. But can I sell my points in a public market also?
Definitely. So both tokens will be listed.
Okay.
So it's really an open market. You can hold your CrowdVilla token, for example, and just sell your utility token if you don't use it. And you will be able to generate this like perpetually as long as you hold the CrowdVilla token.
Okay, this is beautiful. I think I get it. So you're basically having a certain ownership, and based on the the profit generated are really measured in the points, because those are the ones that are being, the number of days that are being utilized. So, and how much is the point worth is being determined by a secondary market, right? So,
correct.
And the same thing, therefore, what is the ownership worth is being determined by the market for the ownership token. So both of them are sellable in the market, and they have different kinds of utilities. One is for staying in, and another one is for owning the goose that lays the golden egg. So,
right.
Okay, got it.
Right. But an important point, though, that we need to highlight here is that, of course, you mentioned that the price will be decided by the secondary market, but then that tokens has a face value in the real world, right? When we say, for example, that to stay one night, it costs you 100 points, we can find similar properties in the real world that is being rented out, for example, on Airbnb. And that kind of create an expected value of that room that is being rented out. And in our case, it will indirectly price the points in the real world. So there will be an interesting dynamic here, because these two assets in the real world, which is the room, and the digital asset, which is the crowd points, will be dynamically interacting all the time within these two markets.
Oh, absolutely. That's a part I like. So some of these points that are generated, so my goose that lays the golden egg, which is my ownership token, which keeps laying these golden eggs every year, which is the points, have a lower bound. They cannot fall below a certain price because you can use the points to say somewhere, you know.
Right, exactly.
But somewhere, some room might be $100 a day, and that is 100 points. So that means each of my points will not fall below a dollar. Doesn't make sense. So.
Right.
Yeah, brilliant. I get that. So great. So how are you going about distributing? So I'm assuming that's the reason for your token sale is you want to build a community around this. Actually, Darwin, I have one question before we go into the token part of it, which is you collected $50 million and you bought a portfolio of companies. You exhausted all the $50 million of cash that you got. And you bought
right.
50 properties worth each, well, $1 million each. Now, what happens if you want to buy another $50 million of properties?
Right. So the whole setup is that we can actually go back to the community. We, as the token holders, will probably create some kind of, you know, carbon forwarding mechanism where we ask feedbacks whether we need to generate more tokens on the face value that we can then, you know, sell these tokens in returns to get more funding into the structures and acquire more properties in other jurisdictions. So when we do that, the face value of the token will stay the same. But for the token holders, they will have more benefits because now there will be more properties that is available to use.
Okay. So it's almost like you're making additional offerings of these tokens, but as decided by the community that owns the current portfolio.
Right. Right. I guess if we want to look at the analog, you know, the example in the real world, in the fund market, it's basically an open-ended fund.
Okay. Okay. It's an open-ended fund. That helps me understand that. So you can keep adding to the fund as you move forward. But in this case, the previous fund owners are the determiners of, you know, how open-ended or when do we bring in the additional capital to buy more?
Right. And I guess also another interesting point here is that, you know, in probably many other ICOs, because the token doesn't have anything real in the real world, then printing or, you know, generating new tokens will create contentions because you are introducing more supply into the pool, and hence people have the expectations that the price will go down. But in our model, the Kravila token in itself is already being backed by the portfolio. So the value, there is a face value of the tokens that will be relatively stable. So when we go out and actually generate more tokens, if we are generating these tokens at face value, then there is no difference for the current token holders. They can expect the same value to maintain, the token value to maintain the price.
Got it. And these ownership tokens are generating a certain number of points every year. And I'm assuming that the points that are being generated periodically, a percentage of that will be used for the upkeep, you know, such as...
Yes, correct.
So let's say you are generating 1 million points every year, maybe 100,000 points will be used. Some of them might be used to pay for your SaaS software. Some of them might be for paying the
yes.
people who are cleaning the apartments and upkeeping the apartments and so on, or the buildings. So you're utilizing some portion of the generated money as to maintain the various buildings that you own globally.
Yes, that's exactly right. Okay. So by doing that, we don't need cash injection from the token holders. So, and I guess this is also the main difference with the current timeshare industry, right? If you own a timeshare contract today, most of this contract will require you to basically pay annual maintenance of that contract, which basically, you know, is going to be used to serve all this maintenance requirements for your room in a way. Yeah. So by doing it this way, by just taking it out from the token economy itself, we don't require the token holders to keep actively paying more resources into the structures.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
So yeah theoretically,
but it's a great design.
Yeah. So in theory, once we acquire the property, in theory, this will go on forever because the property will be there. the structures will be self-sustaining forever. And I guess that's what's unique about this also.
Yeah. And if you decide to exit a property, that cash comes back and you can buy some more buildings into the portfolio.
Exactly. And that's the biggest questions that we get usually from users, from our community members, that has not really grasped the idea that the owners of the structures is a nonprofit entity. So usually the questions was about if there is a profit from the property, who will get the profit? Now, because this is a nonprofit entity, there is no shareholders. So indirectly, all this profit would be forced to benefit the current token holders, because the nonprofit can only use this extra profit to acquire more properties for the token holders.
Yeah, that's kind of obvious. So if you have 10 million tokens and that's limited, that's the ownership tokens, and you bought $10 million worth of property, in 5 years, you exited all of them and they're now worth 20 million, you reinvest those. Now your token value has gone up because you own a larger amount of property.
Exactly.
Brilliant. Okay, so now let's talk about the legalities. Which countries is this going to be? See, there are two things, right? For your token sale, who can invest into it? And for the ownership of your buildings and real estate, where can you own it? I don't know if the both of them are in the same locations or different, but if you can answer the legality question for token ownership as well as the real estate ownership, that would be great.
Right. So I guess I'll answer from the actual operations of the business. Like if we looked at the model of sharing economy, the closest that we have today is basically Airbnb. So we looked at jurisdictions that allows short-term accommodations, rental. So we have some restrictions there. Of course, we have not gone through all the jurisdictions in the world, but we kind of have a rough idea on where we can operate and where we cannot operate. For example, even though we're based in Singapore, we will not be running an accommodations out of Singapore, at least not right now, because as of today, it's practically still illegal in Singapore to run a short-term accommodations. So there are a few other jurisdictions that is similar like this, which is probably too long if I were to describe all of them here. But we are taking a very serious approach on number one, it has to be legal to be operated on in that country. And number two, it's a popular tourist destinations. I guess that's really our filter for today in acquiring properties. Now, for the token model, I mentioned earlier about a timeshare. And this is actually our approach to the whole token sale or quote-unquote ICOs. Because when regulators or probably many people are looking at all things related to token sale as being fundraising or doing an ICOs, we kind of looked at it from a different point of view, and we look at it basically from the timeshare point of view, right? If we are doing this, and if we look at it from the timeshare point of view, we are technically creating a timeshare business, a nonprofit timeshare business. And we are just utilizing the tokens as a means to operate the timeshare model. So that's how we look at it. And we looked at timeshare regulations in many other jurisdictions. So far, we only found two jurisdictions that we will basically exclude in participating in this token sale. And these two jurisdictions are Malaysia and Australia. Now, the reason why we exclude them is because Malaysia and Australia actually treats timeshare as securities. So because we are still modeling our structures as a non-security token, we cannot open this to these two jurisdictions. But aside from that, in many other jurisdictions, timeshare is a timeshare. It has its own regulations, and especially in Singapore, for example, we are following what they call as a basically consumer protection law. So it's not so much on whether it's securities or not, but it's more like if we were to sell this timeshare, whether we are protecting our consumers. So we will be introducing a few key points in terms of the token sale. For example, like if you are indicating that you want to participate and you sign up on the platform, you won't be allowed to contribute your Ether immediately, because the regulations for timeshare in Singapore say that after someone register, we'll have to give them 5 business days cool down period before we can actually start taking in contributions. So that's what we do. If you register with us, we'll need to do your KYC basically, and then you'll basically have to wait for 5 business days before we allow you to make your contributions to the platform. So I guess that, you know, clears up on how we are actually looking at things, you know, legally.
Yeah, that clears it up. So, and is that the same about investors as well into the token sale? Everybody can invest except Malaysians and Australians?
Yes.
Okay. That's pretty simple. So now can we get into the token sale itself? How much money are you raising and when are you raising that money, et cetera, et cetera?
The target for the token sale is for us to raise hard cap 50,000 ethers. So that will be about maybe 30 million to, I mean, depending on the ether price, 50 million. That's actually our numbers that we wanted initially. The reason for that is that we calculated if we are able to hit 50 million, we'll be able to exist in 10 jurisdictions at the start, which is, we feel that it's the right number to be in, with a decent number of properties available in each jurisdiction. So the majority of this fund will basically go towards property acquisitions, and that's it. So it's not about building technology anymore.
But you do need a percentage to hire people who will look for the properties and buy them, etc. So what percentage of this 50 million or 50,000 ETH can you use for that?
Nothing actually, because the majority of these funds will be used for property acquisitions or any expenses related to property acquisitions. In fact, we just signed up an MOU last week with one of a SGX listed property developer in Singapore to help us with this asset management part. So it's really a separate issue, sure. Right? One is property ownership and acquisitions. And then you mentioned about maintenance. So locally in every jurisdiction, we will have a vendor that will take care of the properties. So the way we look at it is that it will be self-funded through the token economy of that property. If you remember earlier with this, we talked about the points that is generated, which a portion of it being used to maintain the property. So that will be in play immediately.
I see. That'll be in play immediately, and that'll be utilized for having the right manpower in-house to seek out, find the right properties, acquire them, and include them in the portfolio.
Right.
Got it. Now, the acquisition of the properties, is that done by the nonprofit organization, not by the crowd?
Yes. Okay. The nonprofit organizations will acquire these properties.
Okay. So that is not a community. So the community does not identify the properties that are to be acquired.
Right. So what we will have is similar, like, again, the carbon voting mechanism. When, for example, when we want to expand to new jurisdictions, we need to know, like, where the community is feeling, like, which jurisdictions is actually popular and things like that. And we'll always seek feedback. But legally, the NPOs will still have the say to actually execute.
Okay. In the US, for example, should the people who buy into your private sale, should they be accredited investors, or can anybody buy into it?
Anybody can actually participate. It's just that we'll do full KYC.
Okay, got it. So Great. So 30,000, 50,000 Ethereum, and that's approximate value somewhere between 30 to 50 million, for all you know. It could be more or it could be less in a year. Yeah, but I get the point.
Right.
You're going to be, I'm sure you have timelines on deploying this capital quickly so that you have the, at least an estimated value. Got it. That's also clear. So now let's say I am one of the listeners and I'm very excited and I say, okay, Darwin, where do I go next? I want to understand it. What are the timelines and which is a website I need to go to
in order
to start buying these tokens? Yeah.
Our main website is crowdvilla.io. So pretty much all the informations are there. For now, though, we have not announced the exact dates for the public sale to happen, but it is targeted to happen sometime in June. Right now, we're in a discussion with another vendor entity that is related to this. So, you know, stay tuned for that update, which is very exciting. You know, that's pretty much it for now. We are still in the private round. So if you're interested in that, of course, the information is also listed on our website, crowdvilla.io. And what is interesting with our token sale or this private sale is that, of course, we can also take in real estate into the structures as a contributions. So if you don't contribute ETHs, if you actually contribute your real estate, for example, you have a real estate somewhere with, I don't know, $500,000. So we'll probably, you know, convert that amount to Ether and then we'll basically allocate a certain number of Carvilla tokens to represent your contributions.
Wow, that is tremendous. That's unique. I have never heard of anything like that. So that's exciting. So what is the difference between, so let's say I'm debating, I've listened to this episode, I'm all excited, I'm debating, should I participate in the private sale or the public sale? How do I make the decision? Is it the number of ethers that is different? Is it a bigger ethers that I have to contribute to the private sale? Or is there some other method that you're using? How do I decide which one I should be in?
So, I think as with many token sales out there, the private round will entail a bonus on top of the base rate. Although in our model, the difference is not that much because again, it is asset-backed tokens. So if you are participating in this private round, there is actually a 30% bonus tokens on top of the base generation rate. But if you're participating in the public token sale, there will still be a bonus on top of it, which is 20%. So there's 10% difference out of, you know, the whole thing.
Okay, got it. So it's purely a difference in discount. So it's really you're encouraging people to get in early. There's not so much a difference in the amount of investment that's made.
Right. I guess the angle is more like, you know, if people are registering early, we are spacing out our processing power. Like we cannot take in, I don't know, thousands of people immediately. Of course, our manpower resources will be stretched in. I guess this is one way we're trying to really space things out.
And you could get sold out in the private sale. I mean, 50,000 ethers, if you get them in the private sale, the public sale may or may not happen, I'm imagining.
Right. We actually self-impose a cap on this private sale. So we're imposing the cap of 20,000 ether, basically. So the public sale will still happen.
Okay. It won't be like Telegram.
Right.
Wonderful. Is there anything else, Darwin? Any other questions that I should have asked or any other points that you did not have a chance to mention that you want our audience to know?
Well, I guess if it's not clear yet, our focus is always about the legality of things. And especially on the, I guess, the hot topic about securities regulations. And we want to actually highlight that, as mentioned, what we are trying to do, at least, we have gone through many jurisdictions' regulations, and we have gone through and acquired many, legal memorandums, legal advisors across jurisdictions that basically clears what we're trying to do here. So I guess that's really, important before anybody should participate. They need to know this.
Darwin, thank you. This has been an illuminating, enlightening episode. I have learned a lot. I have never seen, I've probably done 100 of these. I haven't seen this kind of a token design. It's brilliant and also very well thought out. Very exciting model. I wish you tremendous success, you and the CrowdVilla management team. I wish you guys a fantastic token sale, and I hope all success follows you guys.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for listening to the Crypto Knights. Never miss an episode. Subscribe now at www.cryptonights.io.